Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. For the first time in history, ships of the Israeli Navy are now sailing through the Suez Canal. An Israeli freighter made the trip a month ago, but these are military vessels, and their transit of the canal is another demonstration of the new friendship between Israel and Egypt. Mike Lee reports from Port Tewfik at the southern entrance of the canal.
A few whistles and claps going up from the few Egyptians lining the shore here, and here are some waves from the Israeli crew on board this landing craft. The convoy of three Israeli ships is passing by the remains of several buildings here destroyed by the Israelis when they blockaded the canal during the 67 war. A few horns are being sounded in salute, and here is a horn blast back from the Israeli landing craft. A few Egyptians on hand here at the canal entrance, but generally the atmosphere is low-key. Nonetheless, the captain of one of the three vessels, Commodore Itzhak Davidi, is encouraged by this historic moment.
We are talking now about the future. We hope to live together. We hope that this is only the first Israeli Navy ship which is crossing the canal, and a lot of ships will follow her. Anyhow, the feeling is really wonderful now.
It will be a strange sight indeed for Egyptian farmers today along this famous waterway, but they'll eventually take for granted the presence of what has, for many, been a lifetime symbol of hatred, the Star of David flag. Mike Lee, CBS News, Port Tewfik on the Suez Canal.
Another vessel flying the British flag made port today in the Far East, and Peter Collins in Hong Kong has the story on that.
The big container ship Sibonga steams slowly into the harbor here in Hong Kong today to offload its human cargo of nearly 1,000 refugees from Vietnam after the British government said it would accept them. The British registered freighter picked up the refugees from two sinking boats near Vietnam last week. It was forced to wait off Hong Kong for several days while the new government in London decided whether to honor the commitment made by the previous Labour administration to take in boat people picked up by British ships. Meanwhile, another British freighter from the same shipping company is waiting off a port in Taiwan for word from London on whether the nearly 300 refugees it picked up at sea will be admitted. Still, another British freighter has arrived at a Chinese port with 40 refugees aboard. And Hong Kong police are still trying to figure out who organized the voyage from Vietnam of a small tramp freighter that rammed onto a beach here over the weekend with some 1,400 refugees on board. Peter Collins, CBS News, Hong Kong.
A refugee newly arrived from Vietnam told reporters in Hong Kong today that Vietnamese officials are threatening to expel most of the country's ethnic Chinese, a move that could turn as many as 1.5 million people into refugees themselves. This man said the Vietnamese are talking about cleaning up their society to the roots by forcing every Chinese to leave. He also says the Vietnamese appear to expect more fighting with China, and they want all so-called unreliable elements driven out. Rhodesia's first black president, Josiah Gomede, and first black prime minister, Bishop Abel Muzorewa, were sworn in today in Salisbury. They'll take office Friday along with the new black majority government. Ian Mills has details in Salisbury.
Gomede's appointment is one of several being made this week that will literally change the country's administration from white to black. The new constitution becomes effective Friday, launching the new state of Zimbabwe, Rhodesia. Muzorewa will name his biracial cabinet tomorrow. It will have 10 blacks and 5 or 6 whites. But Muzorewa is having trouble forming his government. Two black nationalist parties are boycotting the government, and one of them has refused to take up the 12 parliamentary seats it won in the April election. The boycott stems partly from argument and bitterness over Muzorewa's moves in having Gumede elected president. One of the dissident parties also claims that the majority rule election was rigged in favor of Muzorewa's party. Because of the boycott, the cabinet will be short of 4 blacks. The effect of this will be to increase the influence of the whites in government and Muzorewa's problems in allocating vital ministries. Some of Muzorewa's close aides fear that the stronger role to be played by the whites will damage the chances of the new government being internationally recognized. Ian Mills for CBS News, Salisbury.
President Carter holds a news conference this afternoon. It will be broadcast over many of these CBS radio network stations at 4 o'clock Eastern Time. CBS News White House correspondent Lee Thornton ticks off some of the issues likely to be raised.
At his first Washington news conference in a month, President Carter probably will be confronted with questions about the country's energy situation. And last week's move by House Democrats against Mr. Carter's plan to lift domestic oil prices. And it's expected the president will be at least reminded of last week's indictment of his friend and former budget director Bert Lance. Expect some discussion, too, of the draft Kennedy talk, as well as the skyrocketing rate of inflation. Add to all of that questions about Rhodesia and what the administration is likely to do about lifting economic sanctions, and about SALT and the coming battle for ratification of the Arms Limitation Treaty. But this evening, the emphasis will shift as the president is honored for his contributions to world peace by the National Conference of Christians and Jews. The occasion could be the highlight of another White House week when problems loom large with little apparent relief in sight. Lee Thornton, CBS News, the White House.
Domestic airlines that operate DC-10s have been inspecting their engine mounts in compliance with government orders stemming from last Friday's DC-10 crash at O'Hare Airport. Many of the required procedures were completed before the government's deadline, 3 a.m. Eastern Time today. DC-10s on which the inspections are not yet finished will be where they are. Foreign airlines that fly DC-10s have been making similar inspections on their own. After the latest outbreak of anti-government disorders, an undercurrent of anxiety today still grips the Central American Republic of El Salvador. George Nathanson reports the mood in the Salvadorian capital.
Life here seems normal under the 30-day state of siege imposed by the Salvadorian military regime, but the apparent calm is only surface deep. Shops are open, the market is busy, and people with jobs are at work. But frequent military patrols roam the streets. Traffic is stopped as cars are searched. Identity is demanded of passersby. Those without it are arrested. Soldiers deploy around university buildings and other places suspected of revolutionary activity. At least 10 persons have met violent deaths over the past week. In open defiance of the state of siege, there have been two massive anti-government demonstrations here in the city, another in the interior. Late yesterday, a revolutionary group took over another Catholic church in downtown San Salvador. There is concern that the government might answer the challenge with an attack on the house of worship. Today marks the 25th day the French ambassador has been held hostage by revolutionaries while negotiations to secure his release drag on. George Nathanson for CBS News in San Salvador.
Iran's revolutionary regime today sent 7 more people before firing squads. All had been members of the exiled Shah's armed forces. All were found guilty of torturing and killing innocent people before the Shah left the country. Primary elections are being held today in Kentucky, and former Governor Louis Nunn is considered the favorite to win the Republican gubernatorial nomination. The situation on the Democratic side, as we hear from Bob Faugh, is different.
The primary field is crowded, 5 major candidates, and the campaign has been confusing. Charges and denials of bribery. Charges that, to avoid embarrassing Governor Julian Carroll, the Carter administration delayed investigating allegations of wrongdoing in the governor's cabinet. That sort of thing is normal in Kentucky, where politics are taken almost as seriously as the state religion, basketball. What isn't normal this year is the campaign of John Y. Brown, Jr., a multimillionaire recently married to television celebrity Phyllis George. A last-minute entry, Brown has spent so much on an electronic media blitz that some polls show him in or near the lead. The outcome, though, should be close. Harvey Sloan, Louisville's former mayor, has a big following there. Congressman Carroll Hubbard has support in western Kentucky. The governor's hand-picked choice, Terry McBrayer, is backed by an effective statewide party organization. And Lieutenant Governor Thelma Stovall, endorsed by several women's groups, hasn't lost an election in Kentucky in 30 years. But taking dead aim on all of them is the high-powered campaign of the man who made a fortune selling Kentucky Fried Chicken. That's why other candidates once laughingly referred to John Y. Brown, Jr. as the Chicken Man. They're not laughing anymore. Bob Faugh, CBS News.
U.S. dollar is strong again today on the world's money markets, and the price of gold is again setting records. It's quoted in London at $277.62 an ounce.